you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. I'm Larry Mantle, joined by critics Claudia Puig, who's also the program director for the Santa Barbara International Film Festival, and Manuel Betancourt, who's contributing editor at Film Quarterly. We begin with the long-awaited Martin Scorsese-directed film Killers of the Flower Moon. Eric Roth collaborated with Scorsese on the screenplay. It's adapted from the 2017 book of the same name, written by David Gran, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Lily Gladstone, Robert De Niro, and Jesse Plemons. Manuel, please start us on Killers of the Flower Moon.
I was so taken by this epic, sprawling saga. You said long-awaited. We can also describe it as a very just long film. It's 3.5 hours. But wow. I think it really merits that. It's this really epic saga following these murders of Osage Nation women in the 1920s. The Osage Nation had become sort of the richest people in the world, given the oil money that they had found, or the oil they had found in their land. And of course, greedy men started marrying into their families to sort of basically steal all of this money. So we follow DiCaprio's Ernest as he gets entangled in a web of murder and deceit, just as he's also falling in love with Lily Gladstone's character, Molly, or he thinks he's falling in love. It's this really weird thing because he loves her, but he's also clearly doing not so great things that are affecting her family.
She's Osage.
She's Osage, yeah. And so it's sort of this like gaslighter melodrama against this like huge, beautiful backdrop of this historical and kind of forgotten history that I think it'll be news for a lot of people, and it'll be enraging. It is very frustrating to watch sort of yet again a story of indigenous people sort of being robbed and pillaged and murdered for what's rightfully theirs.
Killers of the Flower Moon from Martin Scorsese. What did you think, Claudia?
I liked it a lot. The film's most radical departure from David Gran's true crime drama, which is a fantastic book too, is that it kind of goes from being this murder mystery procedural to kind of a Western / crime story / kind of dark, ill-fated romance. And when I was talking about the Lily Gladstone character, it's anchored by these performances by Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro, who I think it's among their best performances. But Lily Gladstone,
saying something.
It is. It is saying a lot. Lily Gladstone, I think the movie belongs to her. She broke out in 2016 with Certain Women, and she is hauntingly moving here. This is a very unsettling, absorbing true crime portrait. It's about power and greed and legacy and racism, and sometimes it seems like it may even go over the line a little bit with its gruesome depictions of violence. But my issue with it was, of the 3.5 hours, for 2.5 hours, I was loving it. It's so gorgeously shot. It's beautifully scored. It's superbly acted. In the last about 40, 45 minutes or so, I began to think it was a little meandering. And it went from being exhilarating and compelling and sprawling, but also delicate, to kind of just dissipating a little bit, taking some of that power and kind of, in some ways, not squandering it, but it just didn't quite stick the landing for me. I was really immersed. But then we get to the courtroom drama culmination, and it just feels anticlimactic. And there were some cameos that that feel like stunt casting. And so that was a distraction. But it's amazing. And there's a little final coda, I think, that's like a finale that didn't fully work for me. But having said this, I mean, it's still an amazing film. It has his, Scorsese's trademark visual flair. He captures the thrum of life in that Osage community. And then also the sense that, like, the era of, like, the kind of old West is ending, and there's this modern thing going on. And then we also find out that this was only 65 miles away from where the Tulsa riots were. So right. We, get a sense of how people of color had achieved wealth and status, and then how white people just couldn't deal with it and came in and tried to destroy it. anyway, it's really, really a powerful story. And it's a great look at capitalism and the scourge of racism. And just wish it were a little bit shorter.
Killers of the Flower Moon is in wide release, directed by and co-written by Martin Scorsese, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Lily Gladstone, and Robert De Niro. The film in English and in Sioux as well. It's rated R, ultimately to appear on Apple TV+. Documentarian Errol Morris, of course, one of our most famous documentary filmmakers for many, many years. His latest is The Pigeon Tunnel, and it tells about the remarkable real life of the man who was known as John Le Carré, the espionage novel writer who lived quite a life himself. David Cornwell stars as Le Carré, who died just about 3 years ago. Claudia, what did you think of The Pigeon Tunnel?
I think it's one of Errol Morris's best, and that's saying a lot because yeah. I really don't think he's made a bad one. Visually, directorially, if not quite thematically, but to me, one of the marks of a great documentary is if it involves you and immerses you in a subject that you don't think you'd be interested in. And I've never read anything by John Le Carré. It's not my genre of literature.
Have been some great films made
of
his
novels. I've seen the films. Yeah, definitely. And some of the clips of those are in this. But I just thought it might be a little too specific for me and that it wouldn't be something that I would love as much as some of his other films. And that is not true. it turns out that it was compelling from the first frame. You know, I did know a little bit about John Le Carré. I knew about the fact that he had been in MI5. But what I knew very little compared to, and for those who do know quite a bit, I think he wrote a memoir in 2016 called The Pigeon Tunnel. So I don't know that people are going to learn that much more if you're already a completist. But you realize that these are two people at the top of their game. Morris is just such a master interviewer, and Le Carré or Cornwell is just such a great storyteller. I love the way he speaks. He's in control of the interview in a lot of ways, and how he's being presented. His diction is perfect. He seems so bemused. He speaks in perfect paragraphs. But you also get some really revealing moments. You find out a lot about his con man father, and he's just such a great raconteur. You feel grateful for what he does divulge.
We're talking about David Cornwell, also known as John Le Carré, The Pigeon Tunnel, from director Errol Morris. Manuel, what did you think?
Yeah, I think this is fantastic. And I think one of the things that makes it a fantastic documentary is that Morris and Cornwell understand the interview as an interrogation. Mm-hmm. So they're constantly playing this cat and mouse game where Morris says, should I be asking you this? Should I really be pushing it? It's like, well, if you really wanted to push me, you would have asked this, but I won't tell you that. And there's this sense that there's this push and pull that Cornwell has. He's a storyteller. So he's already shaped all of these childhood stories, father stories. And Morris keeps trying to push him into being a little bit more self-aware. There's one thing he says he won't talk about, which is his sex life, which if you know anything about him and what came out after he published the memoir, which is he had a lot of illicit secret affairs all throughout his marriage, which he was able to do because he was a spy at heart. That's the big blind spot of the film. But he tells you that. And so it's this, he's so erudite and he's so gripping. And there's also this amazing Philip Glass and Paul Leonard Morgan score that really makes you feel like it's a thrilling spy thing, even though it's a conversation between two people, which is often what spy novels are. It's like, I'm interviewing you and what are you going to tell me and how am I going to get you to trust me? And so in terms of form, it really matches its subject matter.
So cat and mouse interview, sort of imitating the cat and mouse screenplays and novels.
Exactly.
I love that. Pigeon Tunnel is the documentary directed by the great Errol Morris. It's rated PG-13. You can see it at Lemley's NoHo in North Hollywood and also streaming on Apple TV+. We'll just get started very briefly and then come back to More Than Ever, which is a French drama starring Vicky Creeps. The film is directed and co-written by Emily Atef. Manuel, just quickly, More Than Ever.
I think I love this. This is a tender, bruising film about living and dying with dignity, about a woman who, getting a terminal diagnosis, decides that she's just going to go to Norway and die in her own terms, which is very hard for her husband, who clearly wants her to stay and clearly wants her to fight. And Creeps continues to be a transfixing screen presence. And this is just another amazing performance to notch in her continuing and budding canon of films that we're going to get from her.
We'll come back and hear more from Manuel about More Than Ever, given how much she loves this film. Claudia, did you see it similarly?
I very much so. Yeah, I think Vicky is amazing. And Gaspard Ulliel was also very good. And he
he's the husband.
Tragically died. Yeah, last year. So it has actor died in a skiing accident. So it has that extra layer of poignance because it's about death and kind of acceptance of that. And coming to terms with it. And yeah, we'll talk more.
We'll talk more. More Than Ever. We'll come back to it. The French drama. It is at Lemley's Monica Film Center in Santa Monica. It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. Larry Mantle with critics Manuel Betancourt and Claudia Puig.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
So good to have you with us on Film Week on LAist 89.3. Thank you for all the support in the fall member drive right here on LAist 89.3. I'm joined by critics Claudia Puig and Manuel Betancourt. Next up, what we've been talking about before the break, but very briefly, the French drama More Than Ever, starring Vicky Creeps and Gaspard Ulliel, who tragically passed away after the completion of this film. Emily Atef is the director and co-screenwriter with Lars Bubrick. Manuel, please elaborate on what you love. And you mentioned Vicky Creeps and her terrific acting and screen presence, but what else touched you about this film?
I think as a meditation on death and dying, I found it very, very poignant. What you soon realize is that the reason this woman decides to leave her life and her husband and her job and her friends, who all want to be very supportive, is because she can't stand, she wants to grieve on her own terms, not the life she had, but the life she could have had. And seeing other people witness her grief makes it even harder for her to not want to die, which is sort of this like very counterintuitive sort of thing, so that she feels that if she can be alone, she can make peace with how she wants to go. And I just found that so, so very moving and bruising and tender. And they're just, the two actors are just fantastic.
And it sounds different than ways we think of death being dealt with. We've had so many and some really fine films about death, what couples go through or families, but this sounds like a little bit of a different psychological journey.
Yeah, it's a little bit more bittersweet, more melancholy. It's weird that it's hopeful despite it sort of being very, very dour and given the decision that she makes.
We're talking about More Than Ever, Claudia.
Yeah, at one point, her husband says to her, that's not how it's supposed to be. You're supposed to be surrounded by your family and loved ones, and that's how we all tend to think. And she says, you know, you don't understand. Your being there makes me think of the life that we couldn't have, or that we would not have had. And it was a really interesting way to approach it. And it was also a mark of like true love that somebody would allow someone to choose how they're going to die. I mean, in his mind, she should go through medical interventions and do everything she can to stay alive. And that's not what she wanted to do. And for him to kind of give her that agency or that grace, I thought was really, really moving. And it's beautifully acted. It was apparently inspired by Emily Atef, the writer-director's mother's battle with multiple sclerosis. Mm-hmm. And then also the Norwegian part is just beautiful. It's out in this beautiful countryside with fjords. And, you know, you see her appreciation for nature, even though she's really struggling. She has this pulmonary fibrosis and she can barely breathe. And she does that really well.
Yeah.
Also, it's just, it's a really good film.
I lost a friend to pulmonary fibrosis. Oh, no. Very, very difficult. More Than Ever is unrated, starring Vicky Creeps. It's at Lemley's Monica Film Center in Santa Monica. Beyond Utopia is a biographical documentary which looks at families as they attempt to flee North Korea. Madeline Gavin is the director. Claudia?
Yeah, this is a really good documentary. It's harrowing, intense, and important. It's the documentary follows several North Koreans trying to defect, and this very brave South Korean pastor who helps them in this perilous process. And so the director, Madeline Gavin, is presumably embedded, or her camera's embedded. I'm still not entirely sure how it was done, but there's archival footage as well, and animation, and then this hidden video that follows this one family of five's process of crossing many countries to get to safety in South Korea. You know, and at the same time, she's got to give you a little bit of a primer on South Korea and, you know, the kind of oppression faced there. I was fascinated by the pastor who, you know, risked his own life to do this, and, you know, kind of what his motivations were. I thought he was the emotional center of the movie. He kind of deserved his own documentary. But there were some really compelling scenes of this family of five, and you have, you know, the husband and wife anxious to leave, and you have an 80-year-old grandmother who doesn't quite want to leave, and then two children who say things like, Kim Jong-un is the greatest person ever, because they've been indoctrinated.
In school.
Yeah, of course. And so, you know, you're watching all of this and how they're going to, you know, figure it all out, negotiate that. And then there's another person, Seon Lee, who defected 10 years ago and had to leave behind a young son. So she's helping her son now that he's, I think, close to 20. And that's perilous. And unfortunately, that part, she's mostly on the phone, and you're thinking, okay, this isn't as powerful as seeing people escape through, you know, rivers and forests and stuff. However, the emotions that play out on her face are so illuminating, and how she processes this grim information. These personal stories are really riveting, and I think she did a great job with a very complicated...
And the stakes are so high.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Death.
Beyond Utopia is the documentary, and it's going to be in select theaters Monday and Tuesday of next week. Then on Friday, November 3rd, it'll expand to more theaters. Beyond Utopia is rated PG-13, directed by Madeline Gavin. It's a busy week for documentaries. We have yet another one, a.k.a. Mr. Chow, about the restaurateur of Mr. Chow fame. Director is Nick Hooker, and this is going to be streaming on Max coming up starting Sunday, and will also be at the Lemley Royal in West Los Angeles on the big screen. Manuel, what did you think of AKA Mr. Chow?
This is a documentary as dazzling as Michael Chow. So if you've been to any of his restaurants, Beverly Hills and London and in New York, you know that he's a maximalist. You know that he's a dynamic storyteller. He loves art. He's sort of larger than life. And he guides you. He's front and center in the first frame. He's like directing and saying, name a movie, I'll tell you the first frame of that movie. And he does. And he like just like, oh, Lawrence of Arabia, this is how Lawrence of Arabia starts. And you need a good first frame, and you need a good start. And he's constantly so charming and enchanting, and you're just sort of so drawn to him that you somehow get to hear a story about how he was, you know, shuttled out of Shanghai when Mao is taking over, and how he lost a lot of his family during the Cultural Revolution, how he lost his first wife to AIDS in 1992. And so there's a lot of, even though there's flashiness, and there's the story of like how he became sort of Mr. Chow and how he built that brand, there's a lot of really darker moments. And one of the things I wished is the documentary pushed him a little harder, because he's so embellished and so created sort of this persona that he sort of shuts down when anything gets a little bit hard, and he turns away and he says, you know, my silence is my answer. But I love the interplay, and there's some fascinating interviews. So that even if you don't know anything about Mr. Chow, which I did not, I was wholly entertained, because I think that's sort of what he knows how to do best, which is blending that sort of storytelling and artistic, and that's how he lives his life.
sort of the, for the restaurateur, this is like the greatest thing to have this story to tell. And there was a guy, there was a restaurant many years ago that was favorite of Hollywood called Romanoff's. Mm-hmm. And he said that he was a count and all these celebrities. It was a completely fabricated story, but everybody just, you know, it was Hollywood. Everybody took it at face level. And anyway, it just, it's a documentarian's dream, I'm sure, to have a subject like Mr. Chow.
Yeah, and it, especially because in both in the 1670s in London and then in here with Hollywood and then in New York, he was so enmeshed with the art scene. So you have Fran Lebowitz on the documentary. You have Julian Schnabel on the documentary. You have all these people. He was friends with Keith Haring, and Basquiat went to his restaurant, and everyone talks about how he really made these like welcoming space, that all that mattered was that you led a creative life and you wanted sort of your food and your restaurant to be as exciting as the music video or as your art. And he's been collecting art for decades and decades on end, and now he's an artist in his own right. And so that's sort of where the documentary sort of ends, with his, like, what he says, you know, a lot of people have third acts, movies have third acts, I'm in my fifth act.
AKA Mr. Chow is the documentary from director Nick Hooker, again Lemley's Royal in West LA, and starts streaming this Sunday on Max. Pain Hustlers is a comedic drama starring Emily Blunt, Chris Evans, Catherine O'Hara is always terrific. David Yates, the director, Wells Tower, wrote the screenplay. It's adapted from the Evan Hughes book, Pain Hustlers, Crime and Punishment at an Opioid Startup. Claudia, your thoughts on Pain Hustlers?
Yeah, it was a mixed bag for me. I mean, this is clearly a serious and important subject, Big Pharma's role in the opioid epidemic. And it's dealt with in a kind of a lively, accessible way, but also quite uneven. Stylistically and pacing-wise, it kind of reminds me a little bit of like The Wolf of Wall Street or Moneyball, those kind of movies. But it doesn't have the finesse of those. And it doesn't have that much that feels new to say. It feels kind of formulaic in how it says it. But there are some really good committed performances when we find ourselves rooting for Emily Blunt's character. I was thinking about another movie that came out about pharmaceutical reps. You remember the one with Anne Hathaway and Jake Gyllenhaal? Yes, yeah. That was 2010. And that was... it was more lighthearted and romantic because it was about Prozac and Viagra and not fentanyl.
Right.
Not something that will kill you. But so the lively story also is interspersed with these serious kind of black and white comments of patients talking about, you know, their addiction or what's happened, their teeth falling out to the camera. And these interstitial scenes really didn't work with the sort of kind of style that the rest of the film was. It felt disjointed and like it was in another movie. So it had some real tonal issues. I was not. And that accent of Chris Evans, that Jersey Bostonian, by way of, who knows, Maine, was a bit much.
Manuel, Pain Hustlers?
Yeah, this tonally, it's all over the place, and it never quite lands on what it wants to be. But I will say Emily Blunt is fantastic. Yeah. I will follow her wherever. And she really walks a tightrope and manages to find the lighthearted and the more drama. And I just wish the movie were at her level.
All right, Pain Hustlers, the film starring Emily Blunt, Chris Evans, David Yates directed, Wells Tower wrote it. It's rated R. You can see it at Lemley's NoHo and the Town Center 5 in Encino. And it starts streaming next Friday on Netflix. More to come with our critics in just a moment. It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. Larry Mantle with critics Manuel Betancourt and Claudia Puig. So good to have you with us today. Next up is the biographical drama Naiad, which tells the story of the gifted swimmer Diana Naiad, known for her long-distance swimming between Cuba and Florida, as well as other epic swims like to Catalina Island from Southern California. The film stars Jodie Foster as Naiad. Annette Bening also, actually Bening, I guess,
yes.
plays
yep.
Naiad.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Jodie Foster plays her very good friend. And Jimmy Chin, Elizabeth Chai Vasarely are the directors of the film. They're, of course, known for the documentary Free Solo. Manuel, what did you think of the biographical drama Naiad?
This is a crowd pleaser. And I will say that in both the positive and the negative sense. I think this is, if you know Naiad's story, or if you've ever watched any sports drama where like people have to train really hard and then they'll win the game, and you're wondering what's going to happen at the third act. Like, I think you know what's going to happen at the third act. And in that sense, it feels very by the numbers. But one of the things that I really, really enjoyed is Benning and Foster, who have crackling chemistry as these two. They're playing older queer women who have been friends for decades, and they decide that this marathon swim is a thing that Naiad's going to do at 60, even though she failed to do it when she was 28, ideally at the height of her physical prowess. But as Benning, who's like sort of gruff and has a kind of superiority complex, keeps telling us, it's not about the body, it's about the mind. If I set myself to it, I will make it happen. And that becomes sort of the message of the film, that failure is basically a failure of imagination, that if you just set yourself to it and if you just work hard, you will succeed, which is great and inspiring and also kind of grating. And I think the film understands that, and the film goes back and forth between seeing Naiad as sort of this like foolish woman who failure after failure says, you know, let's go again. Oh, I got stung by jellyfish, let's do that again. Oh, there are sharks coming, I can figure that out. Oh, I'm gonna not be able to sleep and I need to like sing to myself to keep myself awake. I will do it. But also how that costs her a lot, and how that kind of sort of can-do attitude can be very grating to those around you who just say, let's just step back and maybe we don't need to do this. And so that I really enjoyed, and the chemistry between the two of them and the two actresses was sort of are at the top of her game. And the filmmakers really bring that nonfiction documentary sensibility to the film and make it really dynamic and really make it feel kind of different. And it's helped a lot by their DP, Claudio Miranda, who did Life of Pi, and he won an Oscar for that. And so he really finds ways of making, you know, Annette Bening swimming kind of interesting and kind of gripping when it's in the middle of the night and when there might be sharks coming and when she might be having sort of an asthma attack in the water. That's all very gripping. But then at the end, to me, we know where it's going.
LA Times did a really good story about how Naiad herself is such a polarizing figure in the distance swimming community. Mm-hmm. She's a very big personality,
yes,
and talks about herself a lot. And there are people who feel like that she's been grandiose in how she's described herself. But it sounds like Benning's performance kind of gets at that big personality. What did you think, Claudia?
Benning's performance definitely gets at that. Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you said, Manuel. It's a fairly formulaic story, as inspirational sports movies are. But the fact that it's about older queer women, I think that's the key here, because they're rarely seen in movies, period, and virtually never seen in inspirational sports movies. Mm-hmm. I can't think of any. So that feels refreshing and new. And then these performances are just superb. As kind of grating as Annette Bening's character is, then you have Jodie Foster's character, who's so warm and engaging and charismatic that, you know, the two of them work so well together. And you can see she's been sort of put upon. She's her best friend, but, you know, she's oftentimes Naiad doesn't tell her thank you. And in fact, she's going to be very high handed with her. And it's just really interesting to watch their dynamic of their friendship, which is complex. And then it's also really great to see two amazing actors, arguably two of the best actors out there, aging gracefully and naturally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're not made up. They're not Botox. It's a vanity-free performances, which I loved. And they bring a lot of dimension and depth to their characters. And then Rhys Ifans as this navigator is also really good, John Bartlett. And then some of those underwater shots are really powerful when the shark is heading for her. And there's mm-hmm. some harrowing scenes. When I looked at it as a story of friendship, I liked it that much more.
Yeah.
That sounds nice. As you say, the two leads are so talented and underutilized these days.
Absolutely.
It's great to see Benning and Foster get this opportunity. Naiad is the film, and it's rated PG-13. You can see it at the Landmark Sunset in West Hollywood or the Landmark Pasadena Playhouse. It'll also be streaming starting on November 3rd on Netflix. The Persian version is a romantic comedic drama starring Leila Mohammadi and Kamand Shafiesbet. The film was written and directed by Maryam Keshavarz. What did you think, Claudia, of the Persian version?
You know, this won the Audience Award at Sundance this year, and Keshavarz is the first person to ever win twice the Audience Award.
Wow.
She won for Circumstance, which has banned her from ever returning to Iran because it was about this underground youth culture. There's a really great dance sequence. Probably the highlight of it for me was this Persianized version of Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun with like a sitar and stuff. It's kind of almost Bollywood-esque. It's really fun. This is a very ambitious, semi-autobiographical tale, and it has like a jot of magical realism. It looks great, a very vibrant production design. Occasionally drags a bit, and it kind of tries to jam a lot into this one story. The protagonist, Layla, is played by Layla Mohammadi, and she has eight brothers. They all kind of fit like stereotypes, which is not great. She's queer and she's recently broken up with her wife, and she has this rift with her mother. But then there's like the final, I don't know if it's the final third, but a big portion of the film is about her mother back in Iran. And that doesn't quite mesh with the other story, which is set in New York. But there's some moments that really resonate, such as when she deals with her identity as the daughter of an immigrant. She said she feels too Iranian in America and too American in Iran. And I think that sentiment for those of us who are, you know, children of immigrants, we can relate to that. And I think that I wish she'd explored that maybe just a little bit more, but I appreciated that. A movie feels a little overstuffed. And because of that, can feel a little like messy and disjointed. But I did like the idea of her balancing the two cultures. As I said, I love that rendition of the song, and it has kind of a buoyant feel, and I love the title, too. I think it's a great title.
The Persian version just rolls off the tongue. It is,
yes.
It is a great title. Written and directed by Maryam Keshavarz. It's rated R, and you can see it at AMC The Grove and AMC Century City Theaters and Lemley's Royal in West Los Angeles. Finally this week, the music documentary Milli Vanilli. Luke Corum, the director. Manuel?
This is a wild documentary, and if you know anything about Milli Vanilli, it just makes sense that it is, because this is one of the greatest con stories in, I think, the music industry writ large. So Milli Vanilli were these, Rob and Fa, this duo from Europe, who took the world by storm in 1989 with their songs and number ones, and they had these dances, and they were like beautiful and had dreads and shoulder
pads.
Built
for MTV.
Yes.
Oh my God, they were. And they and then they won the Grammy for Best New Artist, and then it turned out that they were lip syncing all along, that they weren't the credited singers on their album or their singles, and they sort of knowingly had conned everyone. And so this documentary sort of pulls the curtain back to sort of figure out how it happened, who knew, when, what, was Clive Davis and did Arista Records know, and did they actually hide this, or was it all happening in Europe, elsewhere? And it also follows the fallout. So if you love Milli Vanilli or you love con stories, this is the music documentary for you this weekend.
Milli Vanilli, the musical biographical film, is streaming on Paramount Plus starting next Tuesday. It's unrated. For our Film Week critics, Claudia Puig and Manuel Betancourt, I'm Larry Mantle. Thanks so much for supporting us during our fall member drive.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.